I don't know what they injected into President Biden on Thursday night, but where can I get some of that? I mean, we have never seen Joe Biden this energetic, not even in his prime. I'm calling him Hyper Joe. There are reports that Barry Bonds and A-Rod were spotted before the speech at State of the Union, slipping performance-enhancing drugs into Biden's drink. I mean, I'm talking, he took steroids right before the speech. All right, so of course, the State of the Union. And look, I will concede that Biden was much more energetic than any of us expected. I did not expect him to be this energetic. They compared it to clips of him speaking in recent weeks. And, I mean, he is so slow and so fragile and so out of it most of the time. And then here he was on hyperspeed. I actually have a theory about why that is. I don't think, and I'm not talking about the steroids, so I will explain that coming up. But I'll give you my full analysis. Full recap of the State of the Union. There were multiple bombshells. Biden used the term illegal. And of course, that's a capital offense. The Democrats are livid. I have no problem. I use that phrase all the time. But Democrats say no human being is illegal. Democrats consider it a racist term. And why did Biden use the term illegal? Because he went off script. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she got him to talk about Laken Riley, who was murdered by an illegal, and got him to go off script. And Biden showed you what was really in his head. Every time he goes off script, he says something that angers the Democrats, because that what in his mind, now he's trying to walk it back and he's trying to be apologetic and say he didn't mean to use the term. But at the time when he was off script, that shows you what's really going on in Biden's head. And it was ad lib. That was not part of the speech. They had the written speech that wasn't in it. And I think Republicans are going to use this tactic throughout the campaign, where they lure Biden into saying how he really feels, get him off script, and it could do a lot of damage. Biden also says that the reason that we're paying so much for food is because these greedy corporations. He says that they're putting less potato chips in the same size bag. Shrinkflation. Biden's blaming the potato chip companies for the fact that potato chips are so expensive that you buy the same size bag, but it only has fewer chips. You cannot make this stuff up. Look, this entire speech, it showed us one important thing. It was a good speech. If you're a Democrat, if you're a radical leftist, if you're a socialist, and you saw or heard the speech, you're happy about the speech. But it's fascinating how he totally shifted it. This was a campaign rally speech. By the way, he never speaks this well in an actual campaign rally, but this was not a State of the Union. This was a campaign speech. That's not me talking. That's the mainstream networks. CNN said that. They said that they've never seen a State of the Union that was literally a partisan campaign speech like this one. Usually the State of the Union is bipartisan. Usually it's much less polarizing, and it really caters to the other side. But here's why he did this: because of fear. The Biden campaign is terrified. They're terrified of Trump. They're terrified of Biden's awful record. They're terrified Biden's poll numbers are the lowest of any president in history at this point. Okay, and I'm going to prove it. Okay, I'm going to prove in a moment how you see the fear. And that is why they turned this into a campaign speech. I'll explain. It was also, by the way, the least presidential speech in State of the Union history. This was not presidential. This was the opposite of presidential. He was bickering with Republicans in the audience. He was divisive. He slammed his predecessor, and we know that's Trump, and he meant not his predecessor, but he meant his opponent, but they called it my predecessor to try to make it seem a little bit more presidential. But there was nothing presidential about this speech. If Trump had given this exact speech, I mean, all the media would be obsessing over for days is how Trump was not presidential, but that does not get mentioned over here. This was fascinating. And one other thing, great point that I saw somebody made. I didn't think of this. What did Biden totally not mention? What did he leave out of this entire speech? Anti-Semitism, the rampant surge in anti-Semitism, the worst that we have ever seen in the United States, and the highest it has been since the Holocaust. And Biden doesn't even mention hatred. He didn't even do one of those like Democrat, shams where they say, well, hate of all kinds is bad. Anti-Semitism, Islamophobia. He didn't even do that. He just skipped it all together. That is not an oversight. That is by design. Trump is so afraid of the Muslim vote at this point, of losing the Muslim vote, that he is not going to go anywhere near mentioning anti-Semitism. And when he talked about Israel, I thought it was pretty disgraceful. I'll explain that as well. But again, this was a campaign speech. It was divisive. Okay, referencing Trump 12 times, that is unheard of. The irony is, this would have been perfect for a campaign rally or for a Democratic convention. Biden's campaign rallies are actually never this energetic. So here's what's happening. Let's start with the delivery. We got to talk about the delivery. We got to talk about the substance. And we have to get to the other news of the day. But the delivery was better than I expected, as I said earlier. You know, I expected him to be low energy. I expected him to get confused and ramble. I was even expecting a brain freeze moment. It mostly did not happen. Now, the bar was low. The fact that he just got through it, you know, without stumbling too badly. It was his speech was slurred. He's obviously an older man. You know, you can't hide his age. But his delivery exceeded all expectations. I'm not going to sit here and say that Biden's delivery was bad, because it was not. I'm going to call it what it is. I give them credit. He exceeded our expectations. The expectations were low, but he did pretty well with the delivery, much better than any of us expected. And I have no problem admitting that. However, he went to the opposite extreme, right? It was much faster. It was kind of like rambling in a way. And he just kept going and going like the Energizer Bunny. Okay. Now, why did he do this? I'll tell you why. Because when they rehearsed it, they realized that if Biden slips into his normal mode, his default is he is slow, he drones on, he gets confused, he has brain freezes. They realized that they cannot let him slip into that mode, because that would be a nightmare. So what did they do? They must have rehearsed this speech with him 100 times, and they coached him. They said to him, listen, just keep yelling, because he was yelling. He was yelling the entire time. This was not the old Biden, meaning the senior Biden, but it also wasn't the old Biden. It wasn't Biden from 25 years ago who was more temperate in his speech. He actually was not a terrible politician in terms of delivering a speech. But that was not who this was. This was a man who was yelling like a maniac, because they coached him and they realized that his default is so lifeless. The only way to snap him out of it for an hour and make sure that he stays with the momentum is have him just scream and rant and just keep on going and going. So they must have trained him and coached him and rehearsed him. Now, yeah, did they dope him up on something? Or maybe they took him off some medicines that he's usually on for his health, because maybe they'll slow him down. I don't know. I mean, there had to have been something physiological, but I'm certain that they coached him and said, listen, just race through it and yell like a maniac. And that was the only way to get him out of his default mode. Now, let's talk about the messaging. Number one, it was full of lies. This speech, it was a disgrace. And look, it was a well-written speech. It was both are true. We have to look at it through the prism of the truth and what we know to be the truth. And in that sense, the speech was a disgrace and full of just lie after lie. On the other hand, he can't tell the truth because the country's in shambles. So he has to lie. If you're a Democrat voter, if you're a socialist, and if he was talking to his base, is sitting there soaking it up, loving every minute of it. So they did a good job in that sense. They took a totally disastrous country and a totally disastrous State of the Union, and they flipped it into something that actually sounded positive. Now, it was lies. If a Martian came down and heard Biden's speech, they would say, wow, United States of America doing pretty well. There's a lot of prosperity. The country's thriving. The country's safe. The country's secure. And anything that's bad is the Republicans' fault. That's what you would think. And the reality is, if you actually look at what's going on, nothing could be further from the truth. But but you give them credit. That's kind of their goal and their job. So what's he supposed to say? Okay, I'm a failure? Like, what do you, of course he lied, because if he tells the truth, what's he going to say? The economy is abysmal. French fries cost $10. There are millions of illegals invading the border. Iran has a nuclear weapon, all because of me, but vote for me anyway, because Trump has nasty tweets and I don't have nasty tweets. He had to lie. So, and by the way, I want to point out, MSNBC, before the speech, MSNBC said Mike Johnson messed up. The Speaker of the House decides or arranges with the White House and invites the White House. They set the date. So Mike Johnson set the date. It was set for 2 days after Super Tuesday. And of course, Biden had a big win on Super Tuesday, as did Trump. So this was essentially like the kickoff of the campaign, because now the nominees are basically set. So what MSNBC said, they said, Mike Johnson, he really messed up. He got confused about the dates, because why is he giving Biden this forum? Why is he giving him, why is he giving him the State of the Union, which is millions and millions of people watching, basically like giving him like a campaign rally forum to just kick off the Biden campaign 2024. His timing is terrible. Mike Johnson shouldn't have done it right after Super Tuesday. I totally disagree. I don't think it was a mistake at all. You know, they said, oh, he's giving him all this momentum. I think Mike Johnson, like us, assumed that Biden would flop and that Biden would get up there and it would be a disaster and it would be a terrible, terrible start to the campaign. Now, it turns out not to be exactly true, but that's what I think. I think that Mike Johnson, this was very calculated, and MSNBC is not giving him enough credit. So look, the messaging, like I said, if you're a radical leftist, you love the speech. They covered all the talking points. This speech was a campaign rally speech to his base, to the Democrat base. But that's why everybody's missing this point. The speech reeked of fear. And let me explain. A typical State of the Union, and a lot of people, CNN said this, this is not me, I'm not making this up. It's much more positive. It's much less political. They never, ever slam their opponents. They would never slam. He sat there slamming the Supreme Court justices, literally sitting right in front of him in their robes. Okay? So why did they do this? Why was this so divisive? Why was it a campaign speech? Why is he talking to his base? Usually a State of the Union, your base is in your back pocket. And you actually, it's your chance. You have millions of people watching, independent voters, swing voters, even some moderate Republicans, and you'd be able to reach out to them. The State of the Union typically is your chance to try to pull the other side, the opposition, under your umbrella. Okay? He kept talking about his predecessor. He was frantically trying to stir up his base, slam Trump. And the point is, because usually it's nonpartisan and it's not negative and it's much more positive and not nearly as divisive and you're not bickering with the Republicans. So why did he do this? Because he's so afraid. He's losing. They are hemorrhaging Democrat voters. Okay. He's number one. He's trying to hurt Trump's momentum. That's why he kept bashing Trump. And number two, it reeked of fear of weakness because Biden, Hyper Joe, is very good at fear and weakness. But that's the point. The point is that they were trying desperately to stir up the base because right now they can't even hold on to their base. Usually, and that's why I believe that they're so afraid, because usually your base is in your pocket and you don't have to worry about them and you're reaching out to the other side. Biden, if anything, was alienating the other side, even alienating swing voters, because who's he kidding? Nobody's blaming the potato chip companies except for really hardcore Democrat socialists. So Biden was literally sitting there, please, please, please. You know, hundreds of thousands of people voted uncommitted for Biden. Okay, Democrats are furious. Part of it has to do with Gaza, whatever the reasons are, but Democrats are furious with Biden. So he was desperately, frantically just trying to hang on for dear life to his own Democrat base, because his numbers among Democrats, among black voters, Hispanic voters, that's why he gave a campaign speech for the first time in State of the Union history, because they are afraid that they can't hang on to the Democrat base. Now you'll say, well, but how's he going to beat Trump if he can't get the swing voters? They're hoping that they do enough damage to Trump that the swing voters stay home. That's going to be their strategy. That's their only strategy, at least right now. Let's talk about the content, the substance of this debate. Like I said, not a word about anti-Semitism, because he doesn't want to alienate the base even further. Think about this. How did he open his speech? Okay, it's the State of the Union. It's about the United States of America. He didn't open with America. He opened with about 10 minutes talking about Ukraine. That's how he opened the State of the Union, tells you everything you need to know about Biden. He connected Trump to Putin, and he slammed Trump, his predecessor, for telling Putin to invade NATO. And here's the absurd part about the whole Ukraine thing. Let's say we would even do what he wants, which is send them another $100 billion. Let's say Ukraine even manages to win, which they cannot do, and drive Russia out of Ukraine. That doesn't hurt Putin one bit. All this nonsense about how Putin's a threat, okay? Nobody's denying that Putin is a threat. But giving Ukraine money does not solve Putin being a threat, does not even put a dent in Putin. It doesn't damage Putin one bit. It only hurts the United States. So they're basically preventing a takeover of Ukraine. It makes no sense. What you need to do is negotiate a ceasefire pressure. They're busy pressuring Israel, pressure Zelensky to negotiate a ceasefire. And just, we're not sending you any more money. Give up some of your land back to Putin. Walk away. Cut your losses, because it's always about, well, but then if we do that, then Putin's going to, what's he going to do next? What's he going to do at that point? So like we're giving them hundreds of billions of dollars because, 3 years from now, Putin might go and invade another country. You'll worry about that then. Now, then came the fear mongering. Biden talked about abortion. He talked about January 6th. Like I said, he slammed the Supreme Court justices, and he talked about Israel and Gaza about 40 minutes into the speech, which is way too late, but we'll get to that shortly. I did not like what he said. He talked about the economy, okay, and he acted as though the country, and I keep hearing Democrats do this, wow, look at the economic numbers. Look at the indicators. Look at unemployment. Look at the stock market. I mean, the look at the GDP. Inflation is down. They keep telling us this myth how inflation is down. Everybody knows they're spending a fortune on groceries and gas prices. And they keep talking about, you know, it's like I hear these pundits, these analysts on MSNBC, on CNN, and they're saying, I don't understand. I'm looking, they have these economists on. We're looking at these economic numbers. This is the strongest economy in U.S. history. Why are Biden's economic numbers in the tank? Maybe they're like sitting there struggling. Like, have you purchased bread lately? Have you purchased eggs lately? They know. And then one of them will say, like, maybe people are upset because prices are so high. Maybe people are upset because they can't afford to pay their rent, and because mortgage rates are through the roof. Oh, yeah, that's probably it. People aren't seeing it yet. It takes a while until people – really, the economy is great. We know the economy is great because we're economists, and we know how to look at key indicators. We know how to look at the CPI and all of that, but – and GDP. But, you know, the average person going to the grocery store, he doesn't get it. That's literally what they say. And so it's pretty fascinating. All right, so let's go to Israel and Gaza, that part of the speech. And look, the most disgraceful, look, he said some positive things about Israel. I need to keep explaining this. He did that. Remember, he did that in the beginning. Oh, look, he's such a friend of Israel. He talks the talk. Every U.S. president, there are certain things they obligatorily have to say, the certain amount of compassion they have to show. Again, they're only doing it because they don't want to be labeled. They don't want to basically be rebuffed and alienated by Israel and abandoned. And Israel says, you're just anti us. You just don't like us. So they have to say just enough to be able to show the right amount of compassion. It's something, it's obligatory. He doesn't get credit. Look, if you disagree with me, then fine. But he has shown us now lately, literally after the speech, he said Netanyahu is harming Israel. Netanyahu is doing harm to Israel by hurting civilians in Gaza. By hurting, it's just that he's saying really, really disgraceful, egregious things about Israel, and he's doing egregious things to Israel, putting massive pressure on them, and he's responsible. A lot of soldiers in Gaza have been wounded or killed, Rahmanul Islam, because of Biden pressuring Israel to go soft. I believe that with all my heart. So, you know, the fact that he said a couple of nice words of compassion to me, and I'll read you the words, but they are literally meaningless in the context of everything else. And the stuff that he said about Gaza was really disgraceful. He literally quoted Hamas Health Ministry statistics. He literally quoted those numbers, which he himself a few months ago, again, in a moment of honesty, when he was off script, he said, oh, you can't believe the Gaza Health Ministry because it's run by Hamas. Those numbers are made up. He said that. But now he actually quoted them in his speech. And he announced that he's deploying the U.S. military to Gaza to help build Palestinian infrastructure, and they're going to build this port. They're going to have this like new port to be able to import humanitarian aid. Number one, he's putting U.S. troops in harm's way, and he claims that he's not, but there's no way they could be in that region, literally on the border of Gaza, creating these ports and involved in, you know, humanitarian aid being brought in, and you tell me that they're not in harm's way, hard to believe. But also, you know, he's literally handing Hamas the humanitarian aid. We know it goes straight into the hands of Hamas. They're conducting an emergency mission to build a port in Gaza to create a maritime route that's going to bring humanitarian aid from Gaza. Officials blamed Israel for the mission, claiming they're not letting enough aid into Gaza, which is not true. Number one, Hamas steals the aid. Number two, the people who deliver the aid come out under attack by Hamas because Hamas is trying to steal the aid. And number three, Israel, there are hundreds of convoys that are waiting on the Israel side of the border, but the UN refuses to go in and refuses to deliver it, which is what Israel is waiting for them to do. And then they blame Israel for it, which is a disgrace. And there's a radio host, Sid Rosenberg. He was actually escorted out of the House chamber. When Biden announced, when Biden mentioned that 30,000 people have been killed, this talk show host, Sid Rosenberg, he started yelling, who says, when, you know, questioning those false statistics. And at that point, he was escorted out by security and nearly arrested. By the way, a short time after that, the father of a fallen Marine from California was arrested. He was screaming. And this, you know, you could actually hear it. I didn't know who was screaming at the time or what they were saying. But it turns out this is Stephen Nikui. And his son, Kareem Nikui, was a U.S. Marine who was killed. Lance Corporal Kareem Nikui was killed during the terror attack at the Kabul airport in Afghanistan in 2021. And this poor man, I mean, your heart goes out to him. Such a tragic, tragic story. I think there were 13 U.S. Soldiers, U.S. Service personnel, military personnel who were killed in Kabul during that horrifically botched pullout, that botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. So this man, I don't know how they could. I think they arrested him, and I don't know how they could arrest him. You know, maybe you have to escort him out because he's disrupting. Even that, you kind of just let it go. I mean, you're so heartbreaking, heart-wrenching what he went through. So let me read you here about Israel. Biden's quote here. I know the last 5 months have been gut-wrenching for so many people, for the Israeli people, the Palestinian people, and so many here in America. Let me interject for a second. The Israeli people, the Palestinian people, that is right there, egregious. In my book, you do not equate them. You do not mention them in the same breath. One of them is the victim. One of them is the aggressor. Back to the speech. Quote, the crisis began on October 7th with a massacre by the terrorist group Hamas. 1,200 innocent people, women and girls, men and boys, slaughtered, the deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. 250 hostages taken. Here in the chamber tonight are American families whose loved ones are still being held by Hamas. I pledge to all the families that we will not rest until we bring their loved ones home. End quote. That was the first part. Again, he had to say that. There's no way he's not saying that. I give him no credit for that. That's my opinion. Next, quote, we will also work around the clock to bring home Evan and Paul, Americans being unjustly detained all around the world. Israel has a right to, and he's, by the way, he's referring to Evan Gershkovich. We really don't talk enough about it, but he's actually been held for a year captive by Russia, by Vladimir Putin. He's a Wall Street Journal reporter. He's Jewish, and he's being held on bogus charges, some kind of charge of espionage or something like that. It's a Putin tactic that he goes and he captures American journalists. And, of course, Biden has done nothing to get him released. Back to the speech, quote, Israel has a right to go after Hamas. Hamas could end this conflict today by releasing the hostages, laying down arms, and surrendering those responsible for October 7th. Israel has an added burden because Hamas hides and operates among the civilian population. Okay, you'll tell me, listen, he didn't have to say this. He went further than he could have. Give him credit. I don't know. I'll let you be the judge. Now back to Biden. Quote, but Israel also has a fundamental responsibility to protect innocent civilians in Gaza. The war has taken a greater toll on innocent civilians than all previous wars in Gaza combined. Here's the propaganda. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are not Hamas. Thousands and thousands are innocent women and children, girls and boys, also orphaned. Nearly 2 million more Palestinians are under bombardment or displaced. Homes destroyed, neighborhoods in rubble, cities in ruin, families without food, water, medicine. It's heartbreaking. We've been working nonstop to establish an immediate ceasefire that will last for at least 6 weeks. If we would get the hostages home, ease the intolerable humanitarian crisis, and build towards something more enduring, the United States has it would get the hostages home, etc. The United States has been leading international efforts to get more humanitarian assistance into Gaza. Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the Gaza coast that can receive large ships carrying food, water, medicine, temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground. How's he going to do that? I don't know. This temporary pier would enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day. But Israel must also do its part. Israel must allow more aid into Gaza and ensure humanitarian workers are not caught in the crossfire. To the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority. As we look to the future, the only real solution is a two-state solution. I say this as a lifelong supporter of Israel and the only American president to visit Israel in wartime. There's no other path that guarantees Israel security and democracy. No other path that guarantees Palestinians can live with peace and dignity. No other path that guarantees peace between Israel and all of its Arab neighbors, including Saudi Arabia. That's a lie. Creating stability in the Middle East also means containing the threat posed by Iran. That's why I built a coalition of more than a dozen countries to defend international shipping and freedom of navigation in the Red Sea, etc. And as Commander-in-Chief, I will not hesitate to direct further measures to protect our people and military personnel. Couple of points here. Number one, you see how he's using that as leverage, the trip, right? When he visited Israel, I'm the only president to visit Israel in time of war. So now he's turning that around and saying, ha-ha, you owe me, which is exactly what we said he would do. And turns out another prediction came true. Okay, in addition to that, this two-state solution, this garbage. Look, first of all, I've been hearing a two-state solution literally for 35 years. All I've been hearing about two-state solution, everybody, and it's only gotten less and less possible. The more that Israel is in control, the more the Palestinians don't even bother to work, don't even bother to pay for their own security or do anything, defend for themselves. The whole Palestinian infrastructure is only supported through the good graces of Israel. So it's like, it's so silly. And even the Saudis and Qatar and all these other states basically gave up on a two-state solution until this terror attack came along. It was off the table. But it's off the table because it's absurd. If you right now would tell the Palestinians, here, go fend for yourselves, and you didn't give them any tax dollars, which Israel gives them tons of, they would not manage. They would not be able to function. It's the whole notion of two-state solution. But putting that aside, it is so disgraceful for Biden to sit here and pressure Israel and discuss a two-state solution. They're literally fighting a war with these terrorists who committed this horrific. Imagine after 9/11. That's my analogy. It's the perfect analogy. After 9/11, the United States is in Afghanistan, and people put pressure on the United States and say, you need a two-state solution with Afghanistan. You need to. And 20 years later, they did give Afghanistan back to the Taliban. And guess what? It turned out to be a disaster. But imagine if 6 months later, they're saying, oh, you know what? You're busy in Afghanistan trying to track down al-Qaeda, trying to hunt down bin Laden, which is exactly what they're trying to do, hunt down Sinwar. Well, you know what? We need a two-state solution with Afghanistan. Can you imagine a bigger slap in the face? It's a total disgrace. All right, so then Biden, like I said, he mentioned Laken Riley. He called her Lincoln Riley, but he did mention Laken Riley. That was not in the script. That was because Marjorie Taylor Greene, on his way in, handed him this little, like, medal or this little necklace or something that actually, a pendant that had the name Laken Riley on it and said, like, say her name. That became the slogan, say her name, because Biden refused to mention her until now. And he did, and he said she was killed by an illegal. And Democrats are outrage. I'll read you some of the quotes here in a minute. And now Biden's trying to walk it back. He used the term illegal. Now, look, from now on, we've used the term illegal. I always do. The Democrats call it undocumented migrants. I use the term illegal. Now it turns out that, well, we have to use the term illegal because Biden uses the term. I would not want to disrespect the president by not using the term that he himself uses. But you know the real egregious part, Ted Cruz pointed out? He took no responsibility. In fact, you know what he said? He said Lincoln Riley, because that's what he called. Her name is Lincoln, L-A-K-E-N. He said she was killed by an illegal. He said, but how many people are killed? How many thousands of people are killed by legals? That was his retort. How many thousands of people are killed by legals? So, like, that somehow justifies it. That somehow, he let this person into the country. The man was arrested. The man was released. The man then went and attacked a child in Queens, New York, and he was released again. And they knew, police knew about it, NYPD knew about it. They did not alert ICE. They did not alert CBP. The federal government did nothing to try to deport this man. He was known to be a criminal. Everyone knew he was illegal. Biden let him in. Period. End of story. Biden took no responsibility and basically said, oh, well, yeah, but a lot of people are killed, so it's not my fault. He let this man in. This man was not allowed into the country, and they knew that he was a criminal. They had every means legally to deport him. They did not do it. But they're upset, the Democrats. Why? Because Biden used the term illegal. No human being is illegal. Biden is a racist. Now, so here's what the Democrats. Democrats condemned him. And what's fascinating is that the Biden administration has a policy that you're not allowed to use the term illegal. Isn't that fascinating? In 2021, the Biden administration, I think we said this at the time, circulated a memo from the Citizenship and Immigration Services urging government officials to replace the term illegal and alien with undocumented individual or a non-citizen, an undocumented migrant. So they never, ever used the term illegal because they say no human being. So Biden was actually going against his own. And now, you know, Nancy Pelosi, by the way, basically downplayed it and defended it, which is pretty amazing. But Democrats are furious and Biden is trying to walk it back. Ilhan Omar said, quote, let me be clear, no human being is illegal. And you know what's amazing? When the AP story that quoted this, I think it was AP, they say Ilhan Omar, also an immigrant, said, let me be clear, no human being is illegal, also an immigrant. There's a big difference, okay? And I wish Ilhan Omar go back to her country, but she's legal. She's not illegal. She's legal. So also an immigrant, that's such a ridiculous phrase. Represent Delia Ramirez of Illinois, representative, sorry, congresswoman. She said, quote, disappointed that POTUS would use such dehumanizing right-wing rhetoric to speak about immigrants tonight. You'll know human being is illegal. Joaquin Castro, congressman, of course, Hispanic, Latino congressman from Texas, said, quote, there was a lot of good in President Biden's speech, but his rhetoric about immigrants was incendiary and wrong. The rhetoric President Biden used was dangerously close to language from Donald Trump that puts a target on the backs of Latinos everywhere. Democrats should not take our cues from MAGA extremism. The funny thing is, nobody's pointing out this is Biden. This is actually what's going through his brain. He calls them illegals. And by the way, I have no problem with that term, but I happen to think Biden's a racist for other reasons. And Choi Garcia of Illinois, quote, as a proud immigrant, I'm extremely disappointed to hear President Biden use the word illegal. Hakeem Jeffrey said, quote, President Biden laid out a comprehensive vision for fixing our broken immigration system, addressing the challenges at the border. He also acknowledged the horrific nature of the murder and, of course, emphasized the need to more generally keep our community safe. So I guess he didn't mention, he kind of avoided it. I guess that's why that quote is there, newsworthy from the AP. And Nancy Pelosi said, quote, he should have said undocumented, but it's not a big thing, okay? We usually say undocumented, but he said illegal. I don't think it's a big deal because his focus was on sympathy for the family. But he took no responsibility. The border's his mess. All right, like I said, potato chip bags. He's blaming big corporations. These big corporations, they were so generous. They just loaded up the potato chip bags with potato chips. When Trump was in office, they said, you know what? Let's just give people away free potato chips. If we lose money, so be it. And then Biden took office and they're like, you know what? We need profits. We need to maximize profits. We need to give these people empty bags that are filled with air and have very few chips in them. And that will make a fortune. And it just coincided with the fact that Biden is president, but nothing to do. It's just because they're greedy, but nothing to do with inflation. So you got to look at this speech overall. You have to look at the speech through three prisms, three lenses. Okay. Number one, is it true or false? Number two, did it appeal to his Democrat base? Number two, did it appeal to independents? And I think it's very, very clear that, number one, from a truth standpoint, I mean, this speech was so full of lies. I mean, it's just unreal. It's unreal that he could get away, you know, just create this alternate reality, an alternate universe. And I give them credit. The messaging was powerful. If you're a Democrat, which is what they're trying to appeal to, the messaging was powerful. So the speechwriters were good. They didn't have, you know, they talked about Putin and Ukraine. That actually riles up his base, talking about how Putin is a big threat to democracy. Putin's not a threat to democracy. Ilhan Omar's a threat to democracy. Joe Biden's a threat to democracy. The Ayatollah is. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of Putin. But like that, he's number 12 on the list right now. The world's on fire. We'll worry about Putin when we put out the fire. But that's number one. But number two, you know, the economy and trying to blame it. And then the border, he's blaming it on Republicans. A lot of people are buying into this. You know, this Senator Lankford, I mean, we're not going to get into it now, rehash why the border bill makes absolutely no sense. The border bill, it allows 35,000 illegals every single week. And who knows even then, and they're claiming that they're going to process asylum seekers faster, but that's just going to let more people in. They're going to have more people doing hearings, but then they're not going to come back. They're not going to deport these people. There's no way to enforce the deportation. All they're going to do is process in more asylum seekers. I'm telling you, this bill makes no sense. Why any Republican supports it, I guess they want to be able to say they did something. Maybe they're naive. I don't know. I don't care. But the vast majority of Republicans cannot stand this immigration bill, this border bill, but it's such a great talking point because Senator Lankford, who's relatively conservative, supported this bill. It really is a very strong talking point, you know, and that's what Biden said. He said conservatives, some of them like this bill. If a conservative likes this bill, then why are you not voting for it? Because Trump told you not to give Biden a win. And people are falling for that drivel. Like I said, and now as far as catering to his base, yeah, I think it caters to his base. As far as lies, I mean, full of lies, just one after the next. And as far as independence, I don't believe it for a second. Independence, bottom line. The border's a mess, not getting solved anytime soon. The economy's in shambles. Those are the two biggest issues. The economy's always the big issue. Now the border is so out of control, that has become the biggest issue for many voters. Independents are not going to say, oh, wow, I'm blaming the potato chip companies. I'm blaming ExxonMobil for all these woes, for all the financial struggles and for the interest rates being through the roof. They know who to blame. And I don't think that this speech is ever going to convince them otherwise. So pretty fascinating. But again, they knew that, calculated. They decided, you know what, let's go for the Democrat base and shore that up because they're worried about losing Michigan. They're worried about losing Wisconsin right now because Trump is crushing Biden in a lot of these polls and the uncommitted vote, hundreds of thousands of voters, Democrat voters in primaries voted uncommitted for as opposed to Biden, chose nobody as opposed to Biden. This man needs to win back his base and he is frantic. And this speech was filled with fear. All right, let's get to some. And like I said, 12 times he said my predecessor and blasted Trump 12 times. Never been done. There's never been a State of the Union that was this negative. A caller called up a few times and I keep forgetting to mention this, keep talking about who Trump is going to choose as his VP. Number one, I don't believe that Trump is going to choose Ron DeSantis as his running mate. It's clearly not going to be Nikki Haley. That's, I think, pretty obvious to anybody who's paying any attention. The caller wants to know, and they're like I said, Elise Stefanik, you know, they're talking about Tulsi Gabbard. They're talking about Kristi Noem. That could be a very interesting pick. And, you know, there's really a bunch of conservatives and Republicans who are on the radar in terms of a running mate. Now, but the big question the caller wants to know is, will he choose a minority? And, you know, the obvious choice, if Trump wanted somebody black, is Tim Scott. And this caller keeps telling me, oh, he's going to choose Tim Scott. Tim Scott's going to be Trump's running mate. Here's my response. I don't believe that Trump is going to choose Tim Scott, and I can explain why. I don't think he's going to choose Tim Scott, I'll explain why in a moment. But there's another fundamental point here. We've said this before. Trump is not going to choose someone based on skin color. It is not in his DNA. Okay, Trump is not wired that way. He's like us and myself. I don't look at skin color. I take people based on their merit. Okay, I have no problem with anybody based on their skin color. There could be blacks that are very successful and beloved. There could be whites who are not successful and not beloved. Skin color is irrelevant. I look at the character. And Trump, I believe, is the same way. Is, you know, if somebody deserves it, they deserve it. And you'll say, well, but look, he needs to appeal to the black voters. And what better way to appeal to the black voters. So, you know, than choosing somebody like Tim Scott, because black voters could mean the difference in a lot of these swing states. Look, it's a fair point. A lot of people think that way politically. I just don't believe that Trump is wired that way. I think he wants the strongest candidate, regardless of race, and he'll take his chances. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But here's why I don't think, so I don't think he's going to choose somebody. Now, he might choose a black, or he might choose a female, but it's based on merit. It's not based on skin color, gender. And here's why I don't think he's going to choose Tim Scott, because Tim Scott is not a MAGA Republican. Now, by the way, I need to make this point. I don't think, and I've looked at the history, I don't think the running mate ever really, really makes a dent. I've said this for years. I don't think a running mate can ever help you attract more votes. People always, it's overrated. It's overblown. Oh, if he chooses this running mate, then he's going to appeal to this people from this state or this race or this whatever. Like, I really believe for the most part, you want a running mate who's going to do the least amount of damage, which I think Trump did in 2016. Picked Mike Pence, a nice neutral, you know, vanilla type of candidate. And I think Hillary did the same thing. And Biden did not. You know, Biden, typical Democrat fashion, did choose based on skin color. Did it help him? I don't really think so. I think that getting the illegals to vote and the deceased vote, I think, helped Biden a lot more than Kamala. I could be wrong about that. I don't think Kamala helped Biden. In fact, I think a lot of people were turned off by that. Maybe I'm wrong. No way to prove it. But very rare to me that a running mate, and you say, but a black running mate, now blacks going to vote. I don't think so. I think a black who would vote for Trump is voting for Trump. I think a lot of blacks would not vote for Trump, and they're not going to say, well, Tim Scott, now I'm ready to vote for Trump. But why do I think Trump is not going to pick Tim Scott, by the way? He's not a MAGA conservative. He's not somebody he's done a lot of good things. He's pretty conservative. But, you know, I don't think Trump has that kind of respect. Trump wants somebody. He wants somebody more subdued than himself. I don't think he's going to pick Vivek, and maybe I'm wrong, but he wants somebody who thinks like Vivek. He wants somebody who's not afraid to ruffle feathers and to tell the truth. Tim Scott, I think, is a little bit too timid. You know, Senator Timid Scott. So, look, I may be proven wrong. That's my prediction. All right, other news. Elon Musk. Elon Musk put out a tweet, and we've been saying this, that the census, you know, Elon Musk is really picking up on. I think he must be listening to our show, because he keeps picking up on a lot of our talking points. And then I don't mean talking points. They're not like talking points. He keeps picking up on a lot of our observations. He said people aren't aware that the census counts illegal to determine how many House seats people get, how many House seats each state gets and each district gets. See, I keep saying this, is the reason the illegals are being brought in, it's not just because of their votes, even though that's part of the plan, but it's because it drives up the census. So it gives districts a lot more federal funding, and it gives them, and that's why Trump on the census, he tried to ask the question, are you a U.S. citizen? That's such a crucial question. Are you in the country legally? Because that's what they do, is they use it to get more representation in Congress. It's real. This is terrifying. So here, I'm going to read you the quote here from Elon Musk. He put out a tweet. Most Americans still unaware the census counts all people, including illegals, for use the term illegals, like Biden, for deciding how many House seats each state gets. This results in Democrat states getting roughly 20 more House seats, which is another strong incentive for them not to deport illegals. And then Thomas Massie, Congressman Thomas Massie, Republican, he responded to Musk and he said, quote, and House seats determine how many votes each state has in the Electoral College. So although illegal aliens don't vote, they can determine the outcome of presidential races. Kentucky has 6 representatives. California likely has 6 extra seats due to illegal immigration. So electoral votes, it affects the electoral votes. That is crucial. All right. What else is going on over here? The New York Times is suddenly thrilled that Governor Hochul is sending in the National Guard. This is egregious because the New York Times, a couple of years ago, the head of the op-ed section had to step down because of an op-ed that was written by a Republican senator that said Trump should send in the National Guard to deal with BLM rioters. And now the New York Times, so they used to be very opposed to the idea of sending in National Guard troops into a city to try to prevent violence. But now that Governor Hochul is doing it, now suddenly they're supportive and they say it's a great idea, but they had a meltdown. Remember, Senator Tom Cotton, back in 2021, he put out an op-ed in the Times saying Trump should use National Guard troops to quell BLM riots. Mara Gay, who, by the way, her cousin is Claudine Gay, the disgraced former president of Harvard, the plagiarist. So Mara Gay, this leftist op-ed columnist in the Times, she said, quote, back then, quote, running this op-ed puts black people in danger, other Americans standing up for our humanity and democracy, too. So she wrote this, she put out this tweet. She put a ton of pressure. She was furious and livid that Senator Tom Cotton was allowed to publish this op-ed in the New York Times. Remember, the head of the op-ed section, James Bennett, he had to step down. He was forced to resign over the drama and the tantrum throwing by Maragay and others over Tom Cotton's op-ed saying that Trump should send in the National Guard. Now, 4 years later, Maragay, when Hochul announced that she's sending in the National Guard to patrol the subways, we told you about this. The same person, Maragay, she emphatically supports it. Here's what she wrote in an op-ed, quote, New York City cannot function without a thriving subway, and ensuring that the system not only is safe but feels safe is paramount. Governor Kathy Hochul's decision to deploy 750 National Guard members, 250 New York State police officers to the subways after a spate of attacks is the right one. Hochul could reduce those doubts from civil liberty advocates by making it clear that the mission of these officers is not to arrest New Yorkers, but to provide a law enforcement presence that deters violent crime. So suddenly sending in the National Guard to deal with minority criminals is a good thing, because it's Hochul doing it, not Senator Tom Cotton. John Kerry, President Biden's climate envoy, he appeared to suggest, very bizarre, he said people would feel better about Russia invading Ukraine, meaning they'd feel better about Putin, if Russia released a plan to reduce carbon emissions. You cannot make this stuff up. Here's what Kerry said in the State Department press briefing. A reporter asked him about climate relations between the U.S. and Russia. He said, quote, unfortunately, because of the actions Russia took in an unprovoked illegal war against another nation, we have not been engaged in discussions with Russia, sadly. I say sadly because it's a loss for the world not to be able to have Russia acting constructively on this issue, talking about the climate. But we need every country, including Russia. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce that their reductions are going to be out there, and they're going to make a greater effort to reduce emissions. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time. So Russia invaded Ukraine, and that's horrible. But if they would announce that they are clamping down on carbon emissions and they are going to help the climate, I think a lot of people would feel better about what Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And the House Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic has subpoenaed disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo, who was responsible for the death of thousands, maybe tens of thousands of seniors in nursing homes due to COVID, because, of course, Cuomo sent COVID patients into nursing homes and then tried to cover it up, did cover it up for a very long time. Still, the cover-up continues because we never really got the truth and the true numbers and everything else. So he's been subpoenaed. Let's see if he shows up and testifies in the House Select Subcommittee on the COVID pandemic. We'll keep an eye on that. That's going to do it for today. Hope I get some of those, whatever they injected into President Biden, and we will see you next time.